Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Episode 2 of Australia, a Wikipedia reading, read in Australian by an Australian with an Australian accent, and the rudeness of an Australian to interrupt the sanctity of Wikipedia, but by and large, it's correct. And we've just done the geology, having done the history, which is, oh my God, there's not that much history there. There's a lot of history, however, there's not been sort of great revolutions and wars and armies and unrest and political conflicts. It's sort of like we've basically got the manual and followed it. From Britain, and this sort of lack of imagination, I expect. Now we're getting to deal with climate. The climate of Australia is significantly influenced by ocean currents, including the Pacific, the Indian Ocean Dipole, the El Nino Southern Oscillation, which is correlated with the periodic drought and seasonal tropical low pressure systems, which reduces cyclones in northern Australia. Well, that's about summarize it. The dipole creates rain. So if we get the Indian dipole is there, and it can, there's the El Nino isn't, we can actually get rain just pouring in all the way across to New South Wales, which is really the only place that really matters all that much. In terms of, like, it's the largest. So New South Wales and Queensland. So you've got the monsoons up the top, but you've got this system where the rain has to actually go all the way over the top of Australia. There's no mountains, and so it's got to hit some sort of weather instability for the rain to go. So you've got these situations where there's water in the atmosphere, upper atmosphere, but it just floats right over the top of Australia because there's nothing to make it actually dump. So there's no reliability of a large mountain range there. So it's variable. And you need several things to line up before you can actually get rain coming here. Much of the northern part of the country is tropical, predominantly summer rainfall monsoon. The southwest corner of the country is Mediterranean climate. The southeast ranges from the oceanic Tasmania to coastal Victoria, to humid subtropical to the upper half of New South Wales, with highlands featuring alpine, subpolar, oceanic climates. The interior is arid and semi-arid. Well, all of South Australia is complete desert. According to the Bureau of Meteorology in 2011, Australia's climate statement, Australia had lower than average temperatures for 2011 as a consequence of El Nino weather pattern. However, the country's 10-year average continues to demonstrate a rising trend of temperature. 2011 is likely to rank in the top two warmest 10-year periods on records for Australia. So we're just burning up. Furthermore, 2014 was Australia's third warmest year since national temperature observations commenced in 1910. Well, we've just smashed that to pieces. Water restrictions are frequently in place in many regions and cities in Australia in response to a chronic shortage of water due to the urban population increases and localised drought. Throughout much of the continent, major flooding regularly follows extended periods of drought, flushing out inland river systems, overflowing dams and inundating large inland floodplains, as occurred throughout eastern Australia in 2010, 2011, 2012, and after the 2000 droughts. Well, that's happened again. We've just had a huge drought for about 4 or 5 years, and then it's just rained all in 1 year in a couple of days. Australia's carbon dioxide emission per capita is among the highest in the world, lower than those of only a few other industrialised nations. Well, we might change that, you never know. That's January 2019 was the hottest month ever in Australia, with an average temperature of 30 degrees. Yeah, it was. Was it 2019? Or January, this, I think this 2012, 2020 was hot. Although most biodiversity, most of Australia is semi-arid or desert, the continent includes a diverse range of habitats, from alpine heaths to tropical rainforests. Fungi typify that diversified, estimated at 250,000 species, of which only 5% have been described occur in Australia. What I was going to say is that beets... Qatar, which has a grand total of 23 species of fungus. There you go. Because of the continent's great age, extremely variable weather patterns, and long-term geographic isolation, much of Australia's biota is unique. About 85% of flowering plants and 84% of animals, more than 45% of bears, and 89% of inshore temperate zone fish are endemic. They're only Australian. Australia has the highest number of reptiles of any countries, with 755 species. Besides Antarctica, Australia is the only continent that developed without a feline species. Feral cats have been introduced in the 17th century by Dutch shipwrecks. Bloody Dutch, that's how it is. Oh, look at that. Later in the 18th century by European settlers, they are now considered a major factor in the decline and extinction of vulnerable endangered native species. Blow them away. Australia's forests are mainly made of loggers, no evergreen species. Picky eucalyptus and less arid regions, wattles replace them as the dominant species in drier regions and deserts. Among well-known Australian animals are the monotremes, the platypus and the echidna, and a host of marsupials including kangaroos, koalas and wombats, birds, such as the emu and kookaburra. What I was going to say is monotreme means that they've only got kolaka. Right. The hole is what, single hole, right? So that's right. However, marsupials also only have a single hole, single bottom for poo and babies. That's pretty amazing. Australia is the home to many dangerous animals, including some of the most venomous snakes in the world. I think they're all the we've got all the top 10. The dingo was introduced by Austroasian people who traded with indigenous Australians around 3000 BCE. Many animals and plant species became extinct after the first human settlement, maybe, including the Australian megafaunas. Others disappeared since European settlement, among them the thylacine, which is the Tasmanian tiger. Many of Australia's ecoregions and species within those regions are threatened by human activities and introduced animals, chromosins, fungals and plant species. Of all factors that have led to Australia's having the highest animal extinction rate of any country in the world, the Federal Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act of 1999 is the legal framework for the protection of threatened species. Thank you. This, you've got certain species, you've got a legal framework to protect them. What more do you want? Numerous protected areas have been created under the National Strategy for Conservation of Australian Biological Diversity to protect and preserve unique ecosystems. 65 wetlands listed under the Ramsar Convention, 16 World Heritage Sites have been established. Australia's ranked 21st out of 178 countries in the world. Environmental Performance Index, which is i.e. for our wealth. Whoa. So that there's 10 other countries with less money doing a lot better job. There are more than 1,800 animals and plants on Australia's certain species list, including more than 500 animals. Government and politics don't make me vomit. Australia is a federal parliamentary constitutional democracy. The country has maintained a stable, liberal, democratic political system under its constitution, which is one of the world's oldest since the Federation in 1901. However, where is the oldest democracy? Where was it? Was it? Oh, gee, that's in your memory gone. Was it San Martino, some Italian enclave which has the oldest democracy? I think it might have had the oldest democracy. I'm not quite sure, but it's by mistake it was the most advanced. It had the first woman voters, first universal suffrage, just because we misread what was happening in the United Kingdom. We read their claims and actually enacted them with that before we realised the United Kingdom wasn't doing it. Okay. The Australian system of government combines elements derived from political systems in the United Kingdom, a fused executive constitutional monarchy with a strong party discipline, United States federalism, a written constitution, and strong bimacalism with an elected upper house. Well, there you go. It does have a strong party discipline, along with distinctive indigenous features. The federal government is separated into three branches. The legislature, the bicameral parliament, two houses, the upper and lower house, comprising of a monarch, represented by the governor general, a senate, and a house of representatives. So we do have the queen, but then we, in effect, appoint a substitute, a de facto. We don't sort of phone up Your Majesty, and she's not the one, I'm just doing my Christmas speech and cooking a pudding and swallowing a fishbone and all that type of stuff. We also have a dude which goes into executive, the Federal Executive Council, which in practice gives legal effect to the decisions of the cabinet, comprising of the Prime Minister and other ministers of the state appointed by the Governor General through the advice of Parliament. On the advice of Parliament. Judiciary. Executive Council, a cabinet we call it. Judiciary, the High Court of Australia, the federal courts whose judges are appointed by the Governor General on the advice of Parliament. Elizabeth II reigns Queen of Australia and represented Australia by the Governor General at the federal level and by the governors at the state level, who by convention act on the advice of her ministers. Thus, in practice, the Governor General acts as a legal figurehead for the actions of the Prime Minister and the Federal Executive Council. The Governor General does not have extraordinary reserve powers which may be exercised outside the Prime Minister's request. Now, it does have reserve powers, which are rare in limited circumstances. The most notable was the dismissal of the Whitlam government in 1975. I think that's pretty much the last. If they were to use it, people would have a revolution, I think. I don't know. It would just be too lazy. They'd just give you free beer and keep you going. In Senate, the upper house, there are 76 senators, 12 from each state, and 2 from mainland territories, the Kelter and the Northern Territory. The House of Representatives, the lower house, has 151 members elected by single electoral divisions, commonly known as electorates and seats, because you have to actually sit. So you don't vote with your hands, you actually vote with your bottom. So if you want to change your vote, you go, boom. There's the I's and the A's, but stuff like that. Okay. Allocated to states on the basis of population, with each original state guaranteed a minimum of 5 seats. Elections of both chambers are normally held every 3 years simultaneously. Senators have overlapping 6-year terms, except for those from the territories whose terms are not fixed but are tied to electoral cycles of the local house. Thus, only 40 of the 76 places the Senate are put to election each year unless the cycle is interrupted by a double dissolution. Isn't that most amazing story? So, yeah, the senators can just waft on year to year. Australia's electoral system is used preferential voting of all lower house elections, with the exception of Tasmania and ACT, which, along with the Senate and most of the upper houses, combine proportional representations in a system known as single transferable vote. That is news to me. I don't know. I know preferential voting is that you say, I vote for blog, 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 I prefer, I vote for A, but then prefer B, then prefer C. Now, if A and B are just knocked out, your vote then is still served as your vote for C. So it's sort of like a negative vote. If you do it properly, you can say you can vote for everybody, but you can put the person you least want in last. It's sort of a negative. But I really don't know a single transferable vote, what that means. Voting is compulsory, and I'm voting in here. And I've been voting for, it says here 34 years, something like that. And I still don't. I've never heard of a single transferable vote. Voting is compulsory for all enrolled citizens in 18 years and over every jurisdiction, as is enrolment, which is the exception of South Australia. The party with the majority of support in the House of Representatives forms the government, and leaders becomes the Prime Minister. In cases where there's no party has a majority of support, the Governor-General has the constitutional power to appoint the Prime Minister and, if necessary, dismiss one that has lost the confidence of Parliament. So there you go. So that's when you've got a minority government. So what's it called again, mate? It's called single transferable vote. What the heck does that mean? Okay, we have Australia. There are two major political groups, usually from the former government. Federal in the States, the Australian Labor Party and Coalition, which is the formal grouping of the Liberal Party and a minor party, the National Party. Within Australia, political culture, the Coalition is considered centre-right and the Labor Party is considered centre-left. So you've got, you can vote, you've got the option of it can either be centred a bit to the left or a bit to the right. Independent members from several minor parties have achieved representation in the Australian Parliament. Mostly in the upper house, because the upper house has got a slightly different... So the lower house is per region, and so if you've got 75% of people vote for one party right across, it will mean that the representatives in each thing will be 100%. But then we have it proportional for the whole state. So you'd get, say, 75% voted for a particular party and 25% for another. In the House of Representatives, you'd get all 100%, 75%. But in the Senate, you'd get three of one and one of the other. It'll go that way. I don't know if I've made myself clear. Independent members of several minor parties have achieved representation in the Australian Parliament, mostly in the upper houses. The Australian Greens are often considered the third force in politics, being the third largest party both in vote and membership. The most recent federal election was held on the 16th of May 2019 and resulted in the coalition led by Prime Minister Scott Morrison retaining the government. Make me vomit. Okay, states and territories. Australia has six states: New South Wales, Queensland, South Australia, Tasmania, Victoria, Western Australia, and two mainland territories, Australia Capital Territory and Northern Territory. In most respects, these two territories function as states, except for the Commonwealth Parliament, and it has the power to modify and repeal any legislation passed by territory parliaments. Under the Constitution, the states essentially have plenary legislative power to legislate on any subject, whereas the Commonwealth Federal Parliament may legislate only within the subject areas enumerated under Section 51. For example, state parliaments have the power to legislate with respect to education, criminal law, state police, health, transport, local government, but the Commonwealth Parliament does not have any specific power to legislate on these areas. However, the Commonwealth laws prevail over state laws to the extent of inconsistency. In addition, Commonwealth has the power to levy income tax, which, coupled with the power to make grants to the states, has given it financial means to incentivize states to pursue specific legislative agendas within the areas over which the Commonwealth does not have legislative power. So that sort of came to a rise in the 1970s with the Whitlams, where they wanted to reform Australian work law and stop the states stuffing up. Each state and a majority mainland territory has its own parliament. Unicameral in the Northern Territory, one house, ACT in Queensland, and two houses in all of the states. The states are sovereign entities, although subject to certain powers of the Commonwealth identified by the Constitution. The lower houses are known as Legislative Assembly and the House of Assembly in Australia and Tasmania. The upper houses are known as the Legislative Council. The head of the government in each of the states is the Premier, and in the territory is the Chief Minister. The Queen is represented in each state by the Governor, the Northern Territory by the Administrator. The Commonwealth and the Queen's representatives is the Governor-General. So the Governor and Governor-General. The Commonwealth and Parliament is also directly administered as the following external territories: Ashmore and Carter Islands, Australian Antarctic Territory, Christmas Island, Cocos, Keeling Islands, Coral Sea Islands, Heard Islands, McDonald Islands, and Cocos Islands. I've got to get the postcode because I always give that. They say, where do you from? And you're shopping locally and they want to see whether you've driven to the next suburb. And I always give them the Cocos Island, which is way out in the Indian Ocean. Okay. The external territory of Norfolk Island previously exercised considerable autonomy under the Norfolk Island Act of 79, though through its own legislative assembly and an administrator to represent the Queen. In 2015, the Commonwealth Parliament abolished self-government, integrating Norfolk Island into the Australian tax and welfare system and replacing the legislative assembly with a council. Macquarie Island is administered by Tasmania, Lord Howe by New South Wales. That's pretty sad. Norfolk Island, I'd be upset. Oh, the thing is that the people over there were getting so old that there's no new people going into Norfolk Island. So Norfolk Island used to be a penal colony. So the difference. So let's see. Lord Howe. Lord Howe is a beautiful island. Foreign relations. Over recent decades, Australia's foreign relations has been driven by the close association of the United States through the Anzus Pact and the desire to develop relationships with the Australian Pacific through the ASEAN, Pacific Islands Forum and Pacific Community, of which Australia is a founding member. In 2005, Australia secured an inaugural seat in the East Asian Summit following the accession of the Treaty Amenity and Cooperation in Southeast Asia. In 2011, attended the 6th East Asian Summit in Eastern Asia. Australia is a member of the Commonwealth of Nations in the Commonwealth Heads of Government meetings and provides the main forum of cooperation. Australia has pursued the course of international trade liberalisation. This led to the formation of the Cairns Group and the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation. Now, it used to be CHOGM, and I'll tell you what, there was CHOGM when in 82, I think it was. And we had a beautiful view of the city and the choppers coming in. A bit of smog. CHOGM was these were the Vietnam-era Iroquois going in. It looked just like out of Vietnam. It looked like Apocalypse Now. Truly, it was just the most beautiful thing, a CHOGM concert thing. Australia is a member of the organisation of OECD, the World Trade WTO, and pursued several major bilateral treaty agreements: Australia-United States Free Trade Agreement, the closer economic relations with New Zealand, and other free trade agreements with China, Australia-China Free Trade Agreement, and Japan-South Korea, Australia-Chile Free Trade Agreement, and November 15, the Trans-Pacific Partnership before Parliament for ratification. Australia maintains a deeply integrated relationship with its neighbour New Zealand, with a free mobility of students between the two countries, other Trans-Tasman travel arrangement, and free trade under the Australian-New Zealand Closer Economic Relations Agreement. New Zealand, Canada and United Kingdoms are the most favourably viewed countries in the world by Australian people, sharing a number of close diplomatic, military and cultural ties with Australia. Along with New Zealand, United Kingdom, Malaysia and Singapore, Australia is part of the five-party power defence arrangements, original defence agreement, a founding member of the country of the United Nations. Australia is strongly committed to multilateralism. It maintains an international aid programme under which some 60 countries received assistance. And it's just the thing of the politicians cut the international aid every year. In 2005-06, it provides $2.5 billion worth of development assistance. Australia ranks 15th overall in the Centre for Global Development and the Commitment to Development Index. Well, it must drop off pretty quickly if we're 15th. Australia's Armed Forces, military. The Australian Defence Force, ADF, comprises of the Royal Australian Navy, the Australian Army and the Australian Air Force, numbering a total of 81,000 personnel. Okay. So this is the true 81,000. However, 60,000 of them are regulars and 23,000 of them are reservists. And out of that fraction, there'd be cooks and non-effective soldiers. Of November 2015. So that's actually quite a large armed force. The titular role of the Commander-in-Chief is vested in the Governor-General, who appoints the Chief of Defence Force from one of the armed services on the advice of Parliament, it would be. Government. Day-to-day force operations are under the command of the Chief, while broader administration and formulation of defence policy is undertaken by the Minister and Department of Defence. There's all these white papers. It basically, a university runs it. The military is run by a university, the ADFA. It's a University of New South Wales. In 2016-17 budget, the spending comprised 2% of GDP, representing the world's 12th largest defence budget. Australia has been involved in the UN and regional peacekeeping, disaster relief and armed conflict, including the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Currently deployed 2,200 personnel, varying capacities in 12 international operation areas, including Iraq and Afghanistan. So there's, most people I know have been in Rwanda and that type of stuff. The economy. A wealthy country, Australia has a market economy, a high GDP per capita, and a relatively low rate of poverty. In the terms of average wealth, the Australian is ranked second in the world after Switzerland from 2013 to 2018. In 2018, Australia overtook Switzerland and became the country with the highest average wealth. That's stick me up my nose. I didn't know that one. Australia's poverty rate increased from 10.2% to 11.8%. So there you go. It was identified by Credit Suisse Research Institute as a nation with the highest median wealth in the world and the second highest average wealth per adult in 2013. The Australian dollar is the currency of the nation, including Christmas Island, Norfolk Island, as well as independent Pacific Islands of Kiribati, Nauru and Tuvalu. Wow, I didn't know that. That the Aussie dollars is Tuvalu and Nauru. Nauru is really basically it's an excavated atoll at the moment. I don't know, with some sort of base. It's really poor, Nauru. Oh, it just makes me sad. With the 2006 merger of the Australian Stock Exchange to the Sydney Futures Exchange, the Australian Securities Exchange became the ninth largest in the world. Wow. Ranked fifth in the Index of Economic Freedom, Australia's world is the 14th largest economy and has the 10th highest per capita GDP nominal of $55,000 per person. The country is ranked third in the United Nations 2013 Human Development Index. Melbourne reached the top spot for the fourth year in a row in the Economist World's Most Livable Cities, followed by Adelaide, Sydney and Perth. Yeah, so it's what people from Adelaide say, that Adelaide's a bit of a hole, and I mean it's a nice place, but they really think Sydney's a bit of a trash place. Oh my God! Look, Australia, Sydney, Perth in 5th, 7th and 9th places. Respectively. It must have been Australians have gotten into the Economist, a whole lot of people from Australia. Total government and debt is Australia. It's about $190 billion, 20% of GDP. Australia's among the highest house prices and highest household debt levels in the world. The emphasis on exporting commodities rather than manufacturing goods has underpinned the significant increase in Australia's terms of trade since the start of the 21st century. Due to this rise in commodity prices, Australia has a balance of payments of more than 7% of GDP negative and has had persistently large current account deficits for more than 50 years. Australia has grown an average of 3.6% over 15 years in comparison with the OECD 2.5. Australia's was the only advanced economy not to experience recession due to the global financial downturn. It looks as though that we're not experiencing such a knock from the COVID as well. However, the economies of the six Australia's major trader partners have been in recession, which in turn has affected Australia, significantly hampering economic growth in recent years. From 2012 to 2013, Australia's national economy grew, but only some non-mining states as Australia's non-mining economy experienced a recession. The Hawke government floated the Australian dollar in 1983 and partially deregulated the financial system. The Howard government followed with a partial deregulation of the labour market and further privatisation of the state-owned businesses, most notably telecommunications industry. The indirect system was substantially changed in 2000 with the introduction of 10% GST that we know about. The indirect system, personal and company income tax, are the main sources of government revenue. Which is rather interesting. So rather than a duty, we've actually just taxing our citizens to buggery. As of September, but you can do that if you don't have a revolution. Everyone's not got a gun. It's much easier to take money from people if they don't have guns. In September 2018, there were 12.5 million people employed, either full or part-time. The employment rate was 5.2%. Data released mid-November showed the number of welfare recipients had grown by 55%. In 2007, a quarter of a million new start unemployment allowance recipients were registered. A total of its increase to 646,000. According to the graduate survey, full-time employment for newly qualified professionals for various occupations has declined since 2011, but increased of graduates for 3 years after graduations. Since 2008, the inflation has typically been between 2-3%, and a base rate interest of 5-6%. The service sector of the economy, including tourism, education, financial services, accounts for about 70% of the GDP. Rich in natural resources, Australia is a major exporter of agricultural products, particularly wheat, wool, minerals such as iron ore and gold, the energy in the forms of liquefied natural gas and coal. Although agriculture and natural resources account for only 3-5% of the GDP respectively, they contribute substantially to the export performance. Australia's largest export to Japan, China, the United States, South Korea, and New Zealand. Australia is the world's fourth largest exporter of wine. The wine industry contributes $5.5 billion per year to the economy. I think the general standard, if you go to an agricultural show, everything is $7 billion a year contribution to the economy of honey growing, of barley growing. Everything is just a seven. For some reason, they don't know what it is. They just pick a number out of the air, seven. This is a bit different. In 2020, ACOS released a new report revealing that poverty is growing in Australia. An estimated 3.2 million, or 13% of the population, is living below the internationally accepted poverty line of 50% of the country's median income. It's estimated there is 774,000 children under the age of 15 that are in poverty. Well, I think so. Look, I think the main thing is not wealth. I think it's education that people become trapped in low education. We'll see how it goes. Thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.